And welcome to Inside Agriculture. And of course, you're listening on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, as well as Ag News 890 and Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1, Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. Well, the estate tax, long a thorn for American agriculture, is turning out to be a key difference in the tax policies of the presidential candidates. Agriculture's fight to end the estate tax has lasted decades. While mainstream media focuses on the benefits to the wealthy of ending the tax, the impact on farmers and ranchers who may be land rich but cash poor is largely ignored. Now the presidential candidates are entering the fray, with Republican Donald Trump announcing he wants to end the estate tax, and Democrat Hillary Clinton attacking Trump's tax plan as favoring the wealthy. Now, longtime Republican Ag Senator Chuck Grassley has tried without success to abolish that tax.
Probably Democrats that weren't from rural areas were probably the deciding vote of why it wouldn't come up. So we tried two or three times in 2005 and six, and we just didn't get it. Okay. But it helps to have the president on your side.
The estate tax exemption this year is more than $5 million per individual and nearly $11 million per married couple, with a top federal tax rate above those exclusions at 40%. Now, Clinton plans to announce her tax policy tomorrow, but Grassley says she's already taken a position on the estate tax.
She wants to reduce it down to $3.5 million from more than $5 million where it is now. So she wants to raise the estate tax.
And he claims her plan also raises to 45% from 40% the tax above the lower exemption amounts. Grassley argues the moves will force some growers to break up and sell parts of their farm to pay the estate tax instead of passing it on to the next generation. Well, we're going to take a break here. However, when we come back, we're going to talk about land values. Of course, NAS came out with their report last Friday. We'll talk about that next. Well, as we continue on with what's going on this Wednesday, Inside Agriculture, reports from the Department of Agriculture's National Ag Statistics Service shows farmland values have receded from recent record highs as farmers are facing tighter margins. Now, the cash rents and land values report released Friday by USDA NASH reflect the lower commodity prices' impact on agriculture. Brad Summa serves as the NASH Heartland Region Field Office Director, and he explains the surveys that NASH uses to compile the data.
The first is the June Area Survey, which collects data on crop acreage, land use, grain stocks, and the value of agricultural land. Additionally, NAS recently conducted a cash rent survey. Generally speaking, the NAS reports are consistent with what farm economists and university experts have been saying for a while now, and that is farmers are looking at tighter margins due to declining commodity prices. And this appears to be having an effect on the value of land and cash rents.
Now, for land values, the USDA reports found the average value of land and buildings was $3,010 an acre in 2016. That's down $10 an acre from the 2015 survey.
The highest farm real estate values were in the Corn Belt region at $6,290 per acre on average, and the Mountain region had the lowest farm real estate value of $1,110 per acre. Cropland at the U.S. level was valued at $4,090, which was down $40 or 1% from a year ago. And the United States pasture value remained constant at $1,330 per acre.
Now, as for cash rent values, USDA found all categories of rented land were down from the 2015 levels.
All cropland was down $8 from $144 to $136 per acre. Irrigated cropland came down $3 from $209 to $206 per acre. Non-irrigated cropland was down $8 from $133 to $125 per acre. And pasture land rent was down $1 from an average of $14 per acre in 2015 to $13 per acre in 2016.
Now, in the Corn Belt, which includes Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, and Ohio, All states saw a decrease in cash rent values, except for Ohio, where values stand constant with last year. Summa says many groups and organizations will use the data included in the reports, but adds that data from individual farms, that stays private.
Bankers and agricultural lenders will use this information to evaluate balance sheets of agricultural operations. The ag economists at land-grant universities will evaluate these statistics as one part of the overall health of the agricultural community. And MAS goes to great lengths to protect individually reported information, and we really protect it two ways, privately and publicly. Privately, by law, every individual report that NAS receives is kept strictly confidential. Publicly, when we publish our data, we publish it in an aggregated manner that does not allow discovery of an individual's information.
By working with farmers, he says USDA NAS is providing timely, accurate, and useful statistics to agriculture.
We can't do this without the farmers filling out our surveys. When you see a NAS envelope, it contains one of the best investments you can make in your farm. We just once again want to thank all the farmers and ranchers who assisted us back in June. We value their cooperation highly. We appreciate what they've done for us to help provide this information to the agricultural community.
Now you can find those reports online at nas.usda.gov. That's nas.usda.gov. While investments in agriculture technology have receded so far this year, right along with the land rents, following a record global investment last year. Now, funding from venture capitalists and others totaled $1.8 billion through the first 6 months of the year. That's down 20% from a year earlier. Industry officials say the pullback falls in line with a broader venture capital market. The decline also comes as weak grain prices put pressure on farmers' incomes and corporate profits. Investment slipped in the drones and robotics and food e-commerce categories, while soil and crop technology experienced an uptick. The decrease of investments follows a record high $4.6 billion investments in ag technologies last year. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, as we take a look at what's going on inside agriculture, we're actually going to Washington, D.C., and we're going to do it with a North Dakota farmer. North Dakota farmer Val Wagner spoke on the panel representing the American Farm Bureau Federation. She says the Ask a Farmer panel gave visitors to the Smithsonian the opportunity to learn more about the role of women in agriculture.
We were able to tell them not only about our experiences as women in agriculture, but then be able to answer their questions that they had regarding what happens on the farm and our views, and just have a really great conversation around how women play a role in agriculture.
She says the Smithsonian, that's a perfect venue for the discussion as visitors go to museums to learn and seek out more information.
They already were in the mindset of asking questions and had their minds open. And so being able to have that discussion and be able to answer the questions that they had at the moment was amazing and was a great opportunity, and one that I really hope continues to not only happen in D.C., but happen across the country.
She says by starting the conversation with consumers, it helps them find accurate information from a trustworthy source.
The most important part of all that we've done is just opening yourself up to that conversation, not being afraid to listen to what people have to say and be willing to answer those questions that they have. It not only develops a level of trust, but it also really gives them a place they can go to, so when they do have those questions, they're not looking at Google. They actually know someone that they can ask those questions to.
North Dakota farmer Val Wagner. Well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, land-grant university work fuels popularity in some of the food you eat. Actually, Mexican. That's coming up next. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture from 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Ag News 890, Lisbon and Fargo, and Farm and Country, Thunder 106.1, also Lisbon and Fargo, we're going to talk Mexican food. Well, the popularity of Mexican cuisine continues to grow, thanks to work from a land-grant university. Tony St. James has more.
When you think of Mexican food, you may think nachos, burritos, and fajitas. There are actually, though, examples of American food with Mexican origins known as Tex-Mex. And you might not realize that the spicy staple of the most popular northern Mexican dishes, the chili pepper, owes much of its widespread popularity to New Mexico State University.
Our very first horticultural graduate and professor in horticulture was Fabian Garcia. Fabian Garcia was in the very first graduating class. He had come to NMSU to study for a degree. He looked at onions, pecans, so he really introduced those to our area. And then probably most importantly for us here at the Chili Pepper Institute is that he introduced a new pod type that we call New Mexican to the American public.
Dr. Paul Bosland is Regents Professor of Horticulture at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. He's the co-founder and director of the Chili Pepper Institute, housed at the Fabian Garcia Horticulture Center, and is affectionately known as the Chili Man.
Fabian had realized that the people in the area only had chilies in their backyards. There was no industry. So he was wondering if he made a chili that was milder, more uniform, but high yielding so farmers would grow it, he could get non-Hispanics to eat chili peppers. So he began to intercross or hybridize different chili types.
Mexican cuisine is as complex as any other world cuisine, and it's created mostly with ingredients native to Mexico, as well as some brought over by the Spanish, with some new influences thrown in. Some of the staples include corn, tomatoes, squashes, avocados, cocoa, vanilla, and chili peppers.
Before Fabian Garcia developed the New Mexican pod type, there were many, many different types, just like we have today, the jalapeno, the pasilla, the ancho. And everybody had to use different kinds of chilies to make different products. But now Fabian had a pod type or a chili that could do it all. You could stuff it, you could put it in salsas, and you could dry it and have red powder. So we had now one chili pepper that pretty much did it all. And back in those days, anything that was spicy hot was considered Mexican food. So this became the standard for all the products produced in the United States. So we like to say that Fabian Garcia is really the father of the Mexican food industry in the United States. We know today that the cuisines of Mexico are very complex and they're very regional, but in that point in time and even to today, it's the chili that really makes a lot of the products we consider Mexican food. Fabian had so much impact at the university that our horticulture farm here on campus is named the Fabian Garcia Science Center. And he did a lot of innovative things for research that we use today. One of them was the furrow ridge farming technique that when Fabian first started looking at chili peppers, people grew it on a flat surface, flat ground. But he realized that if we put the chilies up on a mound or a ridge, they could drain the waterway and he'd get less of a disease called chili wilt at the time they had problems with. And so this ridge furrow method became the standard. And we use it on a lot of vegetables today.
In recent years, both interest and demand for peppers has increased dramatically worldwide to the point now that peppers are no longer considered a minor crop in the global market. But moving forward, Dr. Bosland explains.
As farming changes over time, we have to change with the farming practices, have varieties that do well. But it always goes back to Fabian Garcia's concept of getting non-Hispanics to eat chili peppers.
Dr. Paul Bosland, New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. I'm Tony St. James.
Well, it looks like that's enough on doing the chili pepper thing, and now you know what you need to do. Well, probably won't work in North Dakota. Anyway, that's Inside Agriculture. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.